This is February 9th, 2009, and it's part two of analyzing the Dobbs Quadrant with Scott Taping, and we have as an interloper Will Erickson, and Will is interested in what's happening with the tiny note chart and further exegesis of it because he did the Pixel video, I'm Not Beer. So Will might come up with something to say. If not, he'll listen to the tape, the parts he misses when he has to hang up, and might have some commentary for our third session. But Will, you're welcome to say anything if it comes up. So I did a lot, 3 hours last week, sort of just giving the big picture or whatever we did. So Scott, ask me some particulars. I don't know what you want to go into.
Yeah, we didn't. There are a bunch of details that we didn't get to last week. So just starting on the left column with a number, detail number one, which is uracil, which is an element found within DNA RNA.
Yeah, it's the part that makes the RNA. And so RNA is the thing that controls the memory, supposedly, you know, in simple terms. So playing with the memory is the role of Rumpelstiltskin in the global theater, which McLuhan called a memory theater, which was a term from the medieval period when orators, they needed to remember the details of what they were going to talk about. So they would look at the stained glass images around the church or cathedral, and that would be a reminder of topics. And to have a means of prompting your memory is technically called mnemonics. M-N-E-M-O-N-I-C-S. So a mnemonic system is often referred to as a memory theater.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So if you've ever seen James Burke's series, The Connections, he goes into detail very graphically showing how medieval people use the memory theater. So the memory theater is a term that McLuhan grabbed on and said Finnegan's Wake was a memory theater, and it prepared for the Information Society, which was a memory theater. And so I'm highlighting that this chart is memory theater, and you stick the RNA in that in the Dobbs quadrant because the Dobbs quadrant covers the whole chart, 1960-1990. So that's why uracil is there. It's the RNA part.
Mm-hmm. And
I'll say this, the reason in the middle part where you have the Shakespeare plays in the middle column underneath 2TU,
mm-hmm.
I have Henry V. Now, Henry V is the only Shakespeare play in this column. The others, Othello, Hamlet, Macbeth, and King Lear, which are all tragedies. Henry V is not considered a tragedy. It's celebrating a fortuitous or lucky king, Henry V. So, I put the lucky guy, the victorious guy, in my quadrant. I'm the only one with a happy Shakespeare play.
Hmm. Yeah, and you have him, but you have, also you have next to Henry V, Prospero, which I think was considered a comedy, even though it had tragic elements. I'm not sure.
Prospero is the character in the Shakespeare play, The Tempest.
Right.
Which has the famous line, we are mere players in a dream, and we weave the dream. Have you ever heard that famous quote, Will?
Yeah, it's in The Tempest.
Yeah, and people quote it all the time if they want to wrap up about the illusion of life. They quote this thing. So, you know, we're talking about the Android meme as a virtual dream, and so Prospero is the commandant of the dream world on his island. And so he's like a magician, so you put that aspect into Rumpelstiltskin. And remember, we have two things in that, in the Dobbs Quadrant. Just like you have Wayne Gretzky, Magic Johnson, you have two Shakespeare plays, both neat, interesting, almost positive plays, Henry V and The Tempest. But Prospero means cold fusion prosperity as a pun, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then you notice that I'm not a artist or teacher or priest, even though I include those functions, and politician, but you have me as doctor/scientist, or I have that as myself. And remember I announced on Cashflow back on the December 31st show that the fifth unconscious is the medical unconscious. You remember that, Scott?
Mm-hmm.
remember we did the Marx unconscious, the Freudian, the Huizinga play unconscious, play factor, and then the McLuhan communication unconscious, and then the Bob Neverett medical unconscious. Well, that's hinted at here, doctor/scientist.
Yeah, I think you mentioned the medical unconscious on the cash flow show, but I don't think you mentioned it when we were discussing it back then.
When we were discussing what?
When we were going through the phases of the unconscious on the chart talk.
Oh, yeah, no, but because we hadn't gotten to the Dobbs Quadrant yet. So I save stuff for here. Also a pretty controversial thing there. So I'm just, since you might be just mentioning, go through the names. Since you're just going to do that, I'll just go through the names as I see them, unless you want to bring up something. But notice I have the Second Coming. That's after, in the same position as previously, the McCarthyism, Kennedy assassination, Watergate, Battle of the Harvest Moon, all very negative things. Then you have the Second Coming, which has the fundamentalist connotation. But I claim to be a theologian of the Second Coming, bringing in the Second Coming. This chart explains what the real Second Coming is, and I like to refer to the Evergreens' definition of the Second Coming. The Evergreens channeled through Michael Blake Reed. They said the Second Coming will be a time of perpetual change. So that's a hint there. And, when you think of me talking about I forgot to mention this last week. I talk about the quadrants, the LaRouche quadrant.
Mm-hmm.
Well, quadrants are four parts. How come there's five sections, and I'm calling them the Dobbs quadrant? Did we ever go into the Scott, the four and the five?
Yeah, we did, but it bears going back into.
Right, and what's interesting is that the word rant is in quadrant. So it's really, when I'm talking about the McLuhan quadrant, I'm saying McLuhan as a quadriphenic, this is his rant. The quadriphenic rant is embedded in quadrant. And I say in Up the Orphiandi that each one of these experts are quadriphenics, conscious quadriphenics. They mold many multi-leveled polymorphous spheres. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So then, you know how they say, he's the jazz man's jazz player, or he's the critic's critic, or the da-da-da. We could say that Dobbs is the quadriphenic's quadriphenic. Okay?
Right.
And I claim to be the king of comedy. I'm writing the most amazing, creating the most amazing joke. It'll be the joke that when you hear it, you die. You remember that Monty Python skit?
Mm-hmm.
So this elaborate...
I was flashing back on the King of Comedy just now, looking at that element in the chart, and I remembered that he pulls this stunt,
He hijacks the media,
yeah. I mean, his motivation for doing it is different from yours, so I don't think that overlaps. He's just an egomaniac who wants to have the attention. But he pulls off this stunt that's so crazy, it lands him in jail temporarily, but it's so crazy that it garners all this media attention, and he ends up at the center of the Android meme.
Yeah, he's victorious, like Henry V or Prospero.
Yeah.
Some people might argue whether Prospero was victorious or not, but anyways, he was a pretty interesting person. But if you want to say Henry V is victorious and Prospero is ambivalent, then even a tragedy, then you got the both happening in the Dobbs Quadrant, not just a tragedy. So I'm saying that the McLuhan, Thompson, LaRouche, and Croker are tragedies,
mm-hmm.
what they do. In that level, I'm megalomaniac, and I am perceived as a megalomaniac. So that's why the King of Comedy, on a certain level, is appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
I'm accused of hijacking everything.
Prometheus is kind of, he brings the fire down from the gods to the humans, but then the gods punish him, and so there's some tragedy in that. But then you said 77. I think you said 77 and 92 was a rough period for you, anyway, wasn't it?
Yes, because the Android meme was just running amok, and it was very hard for the Secret Council 10, because the question was whether we'd even or achieve whatever grand design we had.
Yeah.
Because the Android meme was just wiping out everything, which you're seeing now.
Right. Do you remember what happened to Prometheus?
Yeah, he had his gut chewed out by birds.
Right.
The thing is, Prometheus is an echo of the Rai theme. He brings fire to mankind. You know, he starts technology. He's a hero in the LaRouche Quadrant. But it's again someone creating something which causes a lot of problems for humans. And that could be the definition of second nature. Technologies eat everybody alive, as McLuhan would say.
Mm-hmm.
So that is one aspect of Rai. There's also the fact that Rai created first nature, too. But first nature and second nature merge in the Dobbs Quadrant, anticipating cold fusion.
Right. And I heard this show on Coast to Coast. This guy was talking about how NASA had recorded these vibrations that emanate from the various planets within the solar system, and that they were able to translate it into sound. And that when they translated these vibrations into sound, they became musical. So, didn't Kepler talk about he would have talked about the resonant nature of
the music of the spheres.
Music of the spheres, yeah. So, like one of the, I think it was they said Saturn had a really ominous, almost very scary sound, which would kind of fit the idea of Saturn, like in the astrological chart, as being a. Something which causes you to have to learn your lessons, but sometimes it's rather dark. And I think it was Jupiter, they said, when they translated it into sounds, it sounded like tropical birds. And this guy made the leap of logic that in the tropics where you hear all the birds singing, what they're doing is miming cosmic sounds. And but there's a beauty to it and an underlying symmetry and the fractal nature of it and so on. And here we're talking about the Android meme as being anamorphic. And then we're talking about the merging.
And a big note. We're talking about it being a big note.
Yeah. I thought the big note probably referred more to cosmic first nature phenomena.
Okay. And then the Android meme is a tiny note it swallows up first nature.
Right. But then, if the anamorphic image of technology merges with the underlying harmony of the spheres and the fractal nature, fractal beauty found within nature, then I wonder, you know, nature probably ultimately is more powerful than technology, and I'll bet technology begins to lose its anamorphic, the Android meme begins to lose its anamorphic quality, and instead of being like a distorted circus mirror, it starts to reflect maybe the beauty within nature when first and second nature merge.
Yeah, and that's cold fusion. If cold fusion is going to be this breakthrough, merges the first and second nature, then it's going to be a beautiful phenomenon.
Yeah, and so if you look at yourself in the circus mirror and it looks all distorted, if that mirror gets straightened out because it merges with the technology, merges with first nature, then all of a sudden we can see clearly, all of the the fact that consciousness is so obscured or obfuscated, maybe all of that goes away and we end up sort of waking up to something that, as Terence McKenna used to say, the promise deep within, you know, our hearts that this is all going to get worked out in the end, the nightmare of history, as it were.
That's partly the meaning of the chart, I guess, the positive part. Will, are you still there, or is Will hung up? Oh, okay, I thought I heard a click. The thing is that to the degree that we don't get cold fusion, the Android meme continues to reign supreme, which is what we're having right now. And that's the drama for humanity, is whether they'll pull it off, whether we will get the cold fusion.
Mm-hmm.
The Evergreens say we will.
Mm-hmm.
They see us going off remember, they say in 100 years, everything we see around us, any technologies or anything, will all have disappeared. There won't be anything like what we have today. And we'll certainly have cold fusion and move beyond that. Made contact with the Boodians.
Mm-hmm.
They say in 100 years, there'll be no disease. Everybody will be able to be healthy all the time because of the technology that we have. We'll be able to put our hand in a little device. We feel a little down, put our hand in a little zapper, and it'll regenerate you.
And presumably problems like overpopulation will work themselves out without having to impose top-down restrictions on people, but somehow that'll work itself out more naturally.
Well, remember, two points. Awareness says that the womb will close and people won't have kids anymore.
Mm.
That's the part of the Ra'i and Isis return to the plane of essence. The other thing is that the Evergreens say they give a positive projection for this century, and they say they do that to energize it, to manifest it, help manifest it.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean it's going to happen. Matter of fact, they talk about maybe the Boodians are thinking about maybe we need to alter these humans again. Now, how would they, you know, alter us? Would they come down and grab somebody and alter his ankle? No. They could be altering us through the Internet.
Well, that's a theme that's going on in the Coast to Coast show with respect to the ambiguity of the UFO abduction phenomena.
Yeah.
They think that, a lot of people really firmly believe that humans are being taken aboard these ships and implanted with the DNA experiments are going on because they're creating hybrids and
altering us.
And altering us, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Fortunately, the Evergreens have stopped communicating, so we don't know what they would say to that idea, but they just said one time, Bob, what about if they're thinking of mutating us again? And it seems like, and that was said to me a long time ago, and maybe 12, 13, 14 years ago. So it's now part of the UFO abductee meme that maybe that we're being altered. And usually it's presented in a paranoid scenario.
There's a lot of paranoia surrounding the whole issue.
Yeah. So that's the question about what is transformation. That's what Dave Worster said. We don't know. When Ra'i returns to essence, we don't know what part of man, meaning humans, that Ra'i created will remain. What is there anything in humanity that can survive the disappearance of Ra'i?
Begs the question, what is humanity?
Yeah. And if, Croker and them talk about silicon coming live and taking over and the human flesh just being dumped, and the machines mutate into something new. I don't know if that's what Worster is referring to. Could ask him. But the question is, what's left?
Mm-hmm.
What is left? We have the Android meme is the cobwebs of Ra'i. And how long do the cobwebs last? A major part of the cobwebs, got shot this past fall.
Mm-hmm.
Economically, that's a high priesthood.
Well, from the Tibetan perspective, if when you die, you're able to get through the bardos and back into essence, you're actually going home, back into your true nature. So Ra'i returns to essence. That's Ra'i gets back, goes through the bardos and returns to unfiltered consciousness or pure consciousness or source of consciousness.
Okay. So the astral body, if it's part of first nature, I consider it part of first nature. We're wondering whether the technological situation will alter the astral archive. And so the part of the questions posed by my stuff is can't rely on death maps anymore, like the Egyptian Book of the Dead or the Tibetan Book of the Dead. They're all part of the Ra'i thing. And so there may be a new way of dying or not dying, which is part of the residue of Ra'i that survives. So I don't like quoting these guys. It's too well known. It's too part of a meme. It's cultures rely on it. I think that the cultures are disappearing and we're mutating into something new, and we don't know how that affects the astral plane. That's what was good about the Evergreens. They seem to be a mediumship that was not embedded in the traditional astral archive. And when Leary died, Tim Leary died, he said it wasn't at all like what I had mapped out in my psychedelic Book of the Dead.
Yeah.
You know, we have that reading with Tim Leary. Where he,
well, whatever one experiences in the astral plane is just projections of one's own deep self anyway. And they are projections, just as the physical material world is a kind of a projection.
Yeah, but this
it's
is
just like, more solid than the astral plane.
You're being like, you're just a UG Krishnamurti dupe. I mean, UG points out that all that...
Well, the point is, what is it that is doing, that is the source of the projection?
Right, but...
That's what's hard to remember.
You're a tape recording based on thought that humans have done about the astral plane.
Not really. I'm looking at what just makes sense to me.
It makes sense to thought within you. So,
I know when I fall asleep at night and I drop into the dream state that those dreams are projections of my deep self. I can either fall asleep into those dreams and just sort of let them run me, or I can begin to wake up to the fact that I am directing those dreams.
Right. So, what you're saying is a kind of wisdom that a lot of people, thanks to electric technology, have heard about from all over the world. And if the Tibetan Book of the Dead is right, it's that simple, and there's nothing more to say. Well, we know we're going to do when we're going to die. Well, how come everybody has all this anxiety and doesn't know how to live? And if it's true that it's a joke, and you just go back, it's Maya, and you die, and you go to the white light, and everything's cool, then there's nothing much to say about this. About our experience here.
Mm-hmm.
It's all just a replay of everything. It's always been the same story.
Yeah, Gurdjieff believed there was an objective reality that you could actually learn to recognize. And from that point of view, then the relativity of the dream becomes obvious.
Right, and that's another idea of being enlightened. So when you read UG Krishnamurti, not Judo Krishnamurti. You know, Bob Carr wrote the book on him. UG says there's no life after death. Any projections is nonsense and blah, blah, blah. And he'd been through all the gurus.
Well, to say there's no life after death is a projection. I don't think he said that. I think it's unknown, but he was into busting every... You know, whatever you projected, he would just bust it.
Yeah. And so we can't know what he is experiencing or what he will experience if he did die and then tried to communicate that back through a medium or something. But Robert Carr will have, as a UG disciple up to a point, will have no truck with talking about what's happening in the future. Or what's happening in a future condition after you die.
And Robert Carr did say that UG is as much with him now as he was when he was in the flesh.
Yes, but Robert Carr recognized that's brain chemistry. He will say, that's just my memories of him.
I'm not sure. We'd have to verify that with him.
No. Well, I've talked to him about it, and he says he can't tell whether his thought is relevant to his consciousness or not. And that he knows that whatever he thinks is just a replay of what the tape recordings that he's had in his experience, and he has nothing to say about answering it.
It
cannot be answered.
So who's the hidden ground that's able to observe all that relativity and make those statements?
You mean that he makes?
Yeah. I mean, if he was totally...
Well, he says that's thought.
See, there's some part of him that separated himself from his thought enough to be able to say that.
Well, you haven't read his book, but when you do, you'll see he gets to the point that he can't tell what's separate from himself in awareness. Like the idea that you're aware of yourself being aware, he says that's even an illusion.
Mm. yeah.
get himself all wrapped up in these.
Well, John Lilly suffered from that dilemma as well.
Right. So it's admitting you don't know. One doesn't know anything, even what your thoughts are referring to, and they're just habitual memes. So I'm saying you're relying on habitual memes. I'm trying to point out, no, there is something new happening. And so that may be doubted, but the whole point of all this stuff is to say, no, there's something new happening.
Well, I don't doubt there's something new happening. I'm not trying to refute what you're up to in terms of what you have
yeah,
to say.
Yeah, but you're falling back into your astral body archive to talk about this. Can we talk about it?
Well,
referring?
Yeah, no, the source of the astral body archive, the hidden body or the mystery body, would probably be the way to talk about it.
Yeah, did you say astral body is the mystery body?
No, I'm saying the mystery body would be able to see the astral body from a more objective position because it's not caught up in the astral body.
Yeah, and if we admit that we don't even know what the mystery body is, I'm just projecting.
Yeah, but you're postulating that there is a mystery body.
I'm saying I'm postulating there's more to be known that we don't suspect yet.
Right.
No culture has prepared itself for.
Right.
And so I'm saying we're arriving in that right now.
This is what appears to be true.
Right. And now people could say, no, science fiction is written about this kind of dilemma or this situation. Yeah, but it's written. It's a book form. We're living, not in a book map anymore. We're living in the map that forces everybody to monitor the news to see what time it is or
yeah.
what is being told to them or what they blog about and counter with. That is a multimedia situation, which is now converged into a post-multimedia.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Finnegan's Wake's the only book that included that possibility. It made itself incomprehensible doing that, but if you understand the key to it, then you can see, yeah, the chatter it presents is close to the experience humans have now
mm-hmm.
through all the digital media.
The Android meme is replaying all the previous media environments up to the Bob Quadrant or including the Bob Quadrant?
It seems to include the Bob Quadrant because it has me in there so much. That's where the synchrony comes in.
You are Bob is a replay of previous technology memes?
Yeah, so if you say that UG Krishnamurti says we're just tape recordings talking to each other as tape recording, then I'm a tape recording and including a broader panorama of media than Gurdjieff, than UG Krishnamurti included. He just said it verbally, a couple of sentences, a couple of aphorisms.
Mm-hmm.
I'm there acting it out in more comprehensively, maybe the same fate
mm-hmm.
of just being a tape recording. But it's more than a tape recording now.
Are you free of the fear of death, or does that bother you sometimes?
No, I don't care if I'm free of it or not, because it'll be something that I don't know what it'll be.
Yeah, you don't know if you'll be there on the other side to know that anything ever happened, or maybe you will be and you'll discover everything you thought was right.
yeah. We got no problem with it.
Yeah.
But I am claiming that I intend to stay here for a long time before I die.
In flesh.
Yeah. I'm planning on living another 122 years. Is Will still there to laugh at this? I think he's gone. He had to go at 8.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's gone. So he'll laugh later, I guess, when he hears this. But the, going for, what is that? 87 and 122, that makes me 209, I think.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, 180. I mean, 80, and then 120 is 200. 209 years old I'm going for.
Hmm. You're the only other person I've ever heard say that. I met this woman in Grass Valley who told me she plans to live that long, and she's already 80. Oh, she's 76. So,
and she's planning to live till when?
Oh, another. I think she said. Planet, I don't remember. If she said 150 or 200 years old.
Right.
You know, and now, she realizes that people think you're nuts when you say something like that. But she said, "So what? I'm going to do it."
Yeah, and the thing is, if you believe in the law of attraction, you know, you can determine whether you want to die or not. And if you don't believe that you should die, you won't die. But I don't think it's totally subjective. I think there's some kind of other part of reality that you can't control, and it might decide something for you that you didn't plan on.
Yeah.
So, you know, barring an accident or whatever they're called,
mm-hmm.
I'll go for it. But and coming to Hawaii has really helped that because it's such a healthy environment.
Yeah, you feel like rejuvenated.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's added gravy to the rejuvenation I already had going on.
Mm-hmm.
Or icing, shall we say.
Right.
I added icing to the cake of rejuvenation. So,
so here's a vector off in another direction. The doctor-scientist implies the medical unconscious. What is the unconscious of the Croker quadrant?
That would be the communication unconscious. But you see, the way I have it here, LaRouche quadrant is about hardware technology. So that's a Marxian unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is Freud.
Mm.
And that would be in the McLuhan if you do this sequentially. That McLuhan has been commented on. Derek de Kirchhoff once said that McLuhan ran circles around Freud. So let's say that McLuhan's pointing to the communication consciousness was playing off the Freud, updating the Freudian unconscious. And then you have the play, Huizinga, Huizinga, H-U-I-Z-I-N-G-A, the philosopher Huizinga, who pointed out in his book Homo Ludens, the role of play, that would be in the Thompson quadrant. And then the communication unconscious, up to the Android Mean level, would be the Croker quadrant. And then I'd have the medical unconscious. So that would be this, if you took this linearly, which you can do, take this linearly, because it's on a visual layout. You know, it's fragmented and grid-like.
Mm-hmm.
But it was technically McLuhan who discovered the communication unconscious. And Croker just, updates that, the unconscious, the communication unconscious. So, LaRouche argued with Marx. McLuhan argued with Freud. You saw that article I posted recently where he talks about out of the castle into the counting house. You read that article, right? 1946?
No, I missed that one. I'll have to
Go
look for it.
But he talks about Freud and Marx there and moves past them. And McLuhan's reacting to Freud, and then Thompson is reacting to the industrial complex that MIT represents, and Thompson definitely is into play. He drops out. And then Croker, he's dealing with the Android meme. So Thompson is playing off the work ethic and gets into an ecological, what he calls cultural ecology scenario. So what you're reacting to, LaRouche reacts to Marx, McLuhan reacts to Freud, Thompson reacts to the work ethic, and Croker reacts to the, and it's been, I got a little blip. Oh, somebody's calling me, can't talk to him. What did we just say now?
You said Thompson is work ethic?
Yeah, I'm talking about how they react. LaRouche's
work ethic, isn't that sort of Protestant?
Yeah. And, Thompson's is reacting to that and creates the enhances the play unconscious. And then Croker is reacting to McLuhan. So he creates something that he thinks is past McLuhan.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, LaRouche is dealing with the Marxian unconscious, McLuhan with the Freudian unconscious, Thompson with the Huizinga unconscious, and Croker responding to the communication unconscious.
Thompson is the what unconscious? Huizinga?
He's reacting. Okay. Marx, LaRouche is reacting to the Marxian unconscious. McLuhan is reacting to the Freudian unconscious. Thompson is reacting to the Huizinga unconscious, philosopher.
Oh, okay.
Huizinga, the author of Homo Ludens.
Is Gregory Bateson in there also? Bateson?
Yeah, Bateson is in the Thompson quadrant. And so they're reacting to the play unconscious. And then Thompson's Croker's reacting to the communication unconscious.
Mm-hmm. And Dobbs is reacting to
the medical unconscious. But see, you see, there's two levels here. LaRouche is reacting, trying to come up with something better than Marx. McLuhan's trying to come up better than Freud. Thompson's trying to come up something better than the Protestant ethic. Croker is trying to come up with something better than McLuhan.
Mm-hmm. And ultimately Croker doesn't succeed because McLuhan had it more right than Croker knew. And I think a couple weeks ago or some recent discussion, we discovered that actually Marx was a lot more illumined than he was interpreted to be by the communist nations. So maybe LaRouche doesn't even understand the depths of Marx.
Well, as I say in Up the Orphic Ante, they dance on the memes.
On the memes,
LaRouche dances
on the effects of Marx, regardless of whether Marx had it right. He's reacting to the effects of Marx in the world.
Yeah, yeah. And in a way, trying to improve on it. And so that Croker is trying to improve on McLuhan.
But on what he perceives as McLuhan's effects.
Yes.
You can't really improve on McLuhan, can you?
Yeah, you could. You could write things that he didn't particularly write, but you could go back and read in McLuhan, find things between the lines or implied or intuited that would understand what Croker added to McLuhan.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what's his name? Joseph Beuys. He announced that back in 1951 that he added two chapters to Finnegan's Wake.
Mm.
He's a famous artist. Say conceptual artist that period, but I was saying there was two threads. You have the reaction to something, and you create something new in reacting to it. But you may not kill what you've reacted to, but you paradoxically have added, contributed something new.
Mm-hmm.
So the Marx, Freud, Huizinga, McLuhan, and medical unconscious memes have their own spaces. They're like senses. They create their own spaces. They stay there. They rotate. They spin as clothing crystals.
Mm-hmm.
But LaRouche, McLuhan, Thompson, and Croker did create something new.
Mm-hmm.
Just as I did.
Mm-hmm.
I created media's anachrony, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You don't think McLuhan was aware of media xenocrony?
I think he was aware of it. He picked up on it. Zappa picked up on it. But they never boasted about it.
Mm-hmm.
Boasted about their role in the middle of it.
Right.
That's what I did.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I can be perceived as a king of comedy megalomaniac.
Right.
But I'm not saying, I don't think I mean that. I'm saying that you might have to deal with this in some way at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But the Android meme will make you think that you're at the center of it. But you will not be at the center of it the way I'm saying I am, because this is a transition period. So you have one person aware of it, before everybody goes in and thinks they're it and are given it.
Mm-hmm. Why does it have to come down to one person?
It seems to be in Western consciousness, their contribution to culture is to create the individual ego as a cultural hero. And the great artists, you later have Da Vinci, Beethoven, Mozart, all that stuff, Picasso. It seems that
it all concresses into one point.
Because of the Gutenberg galaxy, so the printed meme created the literate individual, and so culture and the idea of genius came into the world of art or creativity. The whole point that McLuhan made when he said that he would play down the notion of genius. He said, genius is someone who notices something that other people don't notice. So, but now that we're into the Android meme, and as McLuhan said, everybody into nobody, the role of the genius of the transition point, or of a particular individual creating something, is in question. So, did Bill Gates create something on the level of genius? Did Steve Jobs create something on the level of genius? Did Kissinger create something on the level of genius in international diplomacy? It's a little vague.
No, they say that whereas, you know, breakthroughs in technology could occur in the mind of one man in the past, now it takes teams of people to make these breakthroughs.
Right. And so for pop culture, for the mass mind.
However, once the breakthrough is made, they'll tend to be a spokesman for that breakthrough.
Yes, it tends to become aligned with a figure. In our culture, we want to think some individual did it.
Yeah, but some individual will be considered by his peers to be the best spokesman for that team.
Yeah, so you have that because Western culture created the meme of individuality, and it's a part of second nature, and it's true. Individuals become a figurehead or made the most contribution. I mean, the Mothers of Invention argued with Zappa and sued him when he reissued the Mothers' work from the 60s. When he reissued it in the 80s, they felt they weren't getting the royalties they should get because they made the music. And I think they settled out of court with Zappa. I don't know what happened. But the Zappa said, no, you guys signed papers and I had the rights to it, so it's my stuff. Mm-hmm. So there's the argument of a person in the band like Don Preston who says that Zappa would steal from or incorporate what the players brought to it.
Mm-hmm.
But Zappa would say, no, I wrote the music and I allowed you to grow with it, to improvise with it, to learn it. Mm-hmm. So there was the very question of what had Zappa done and what had the Mothers done. So, but, you know, in history, Zappa is known as the leader, you know, because our culture tends to favor the individual genius, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're now in a new situation where all that's in question. And so if anything is pointing to me, it's the Android meme and its Western subset of itself, the Western part of the Android meme, which includes all cultures and technological environments. It would, within the Western meme, point to one person. And so within the Western heritage, that would be me.
Right. And also, but also you're a little like...
I got to say this no more. Let me just say this part. So, I'm saying, I want to add this part, that I'm aware that it's doing that, and don't take the credit that way. It's just that the Android meme will focus on one person for the Western part of its constituents, and therefore will point to me. But because I'm fully aware of what it's doing, I don't believe that, so to speak. I don't limit my beliefs to that. So I include the anonymous part of the whole situation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, not the mystery part, though that's included, but the anonymous part, I recognize that I didn't do it if you include other cultural memes, interpretation of where technology comes from. Okay, now you can say what you were going to say.
Well, the fact that you represent yourself as who you are self elected. I heard last week. I heard a physicist who represents who received a Nobel Prize in science, and he said there was all kinds of competition to receive this Nobel Prize, but ultimately he was the one who got it. Ultimately, he was the one who was elected, even though he had to, in turn, say that it was a team effort, and he had to acknowledge all the people who contributed to the breakthrough, who he worked with. He was the one who was elected, but he was elected. He didn't elect himself. In your case, you were never elected. You sort of elected yourself to be the spokesman.
Well, I became Secret Council of 10 chairperson, and that...
Yeah, but who elected you? You were elected by the android meme.
Right, but the people I competed against in the Secret Council 10 election acknowledged that I had outsmarted them, and so I was accepted as chairperson.
Were any of those people in the running to become elected to that position? Did they even understand what the position was before it was consummated by you or consecrated by you?
I think they thought they understood, and they used their understanding to organize their run within the campaigns. So it turned out that their knowledge was deficient.
Why now? But you see, with the in the case of the Nobel Prize winning physicist, his colleagues will speak on his behalf, even though some of them, their egos got hurt because they didn't actually get the Nobel Prize themselves. In your case, your colleagues are remaining silent. We don't know. There's no way to verify that they.
That's right. And when I said that my phone went off about 10 minutes ago, that was the richest man in the world calling.
Uh-huh.
He calls me at least every other day, usually every day. So I know, since it's a secret group, I know I've got my peer recognition. Now, I'm saying that what I'm producing in the popular media will be understood to be correct or accurate and true, you know, within 50 years. So I'm presenting my case to prove my situation now, and have been doing it since the 80s, but it's only for the public record, whatever the public is, the Android Meme record. There is the work that I do, which I'm involved in, and that's what you can't know about, so to speak. It's confidential.
Right.
But I do say on cash flow, in a year and a half, we'll have cold fusion and all that, and breakthrough, and I predicted what happened this past fall, you know, last January. So there is glimpses of my accuracy, but since we haven't got cold fusion as an environment, then that's still up in the air as far as the public record.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, nobody would know whether what I'm saying is based on reality. Just like on International Connection yesterday, somebody called in and was offering themselves to be part of the show, to be a regular and this and that, and he had a problem with me. And why? Greg asked him. Greg Duffel asked him. He said, well, I don't know whether Bob is sane or not. As it is, what it always comes down to. And it's a valid point. Of course it sounds nuts. But as the evidence builds up by associates, it seems to be happening. So I'm saying that the very weird situation we're in, where the Android meme is culture, and we don't know who the genius is, and people win their Oscars and have to acknowledge a million people as part of themselves in making the potential movie that got them the Oscar, this juggling of the four bodies that every quote individual has to deal with in that situation, to be the individual that is the one conscious of the situation in the Western tradition, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm the one laying out that script. No one else is. Nobody's making the claim. Nobody's acting it out. Nobody's proving it like I am.
No.
And
you're totally unique, Bob. You're totally unique.
Yeah, totally unique. So here, that is what the genius is unique.
Mm-hmm.
And I even include, of course, the sub-genius aspect, because the sub-genius is the cult of the subgenius, or the doctrine of the Church of the Subgenius, laid out by Stang and his cohorts, is an expression of the problem of being a genius under traditional Gutenbergian artist genius under Gutenbergian or under Android meme conditions. And that's why the artist is in the tragic Croker quadrant.
Mm.
Croker celebrates the artist. The Church of Genius celebrates Western individual creativity.
Mm.
They make a big deal about how I ripped them off. I'm not original, right?
Mm.
So I show that what they act out in their dilemma of being a genius, and they have to include the idea, the humble idea that they're just sub-geniuses, I explain the effects the Android meme creates that evokes a phenomenon like the Church of Subgenius. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'm explaining why there is a Church of Subgenius as one of the subsets of the larger exegesis I do.
Mm-hmm. Because
there are many creative people who ally themselves, say they're members of the Church of Subgenius, you know, traditional creative artists, musicians, movie directors, whatever they do, that say yes, they have memberships of Church Subgenius.
But they seem to practice philosophical anarchy.
Well, that would be post Gutenbergian anarchy, post categories.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, yeah, that's what they do. They replay that dadaistic surrealistic meme.
Mm-hmm.
But and that was a reaction in the 1920s to the anonymity and collective creativity that the radio environment and movie environment was bringing in, threatening the idea of the artist.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Duchamp said the artist doesn't make anything, the artist thinks.
Right. Yeah, even though the Church of the Subgenius never gets recognized by the larger consensus reality, and it probably is just considered to be a trivial spoof, it actually is a pretty there's a bit of genius in it.
Oh yeah, there's cultural creativity. Look, what's that guy from Devo, Mark Mothersbaugh? Okay, he is in Hollywood and he makes a lot of ads that have recently had prominence. So here's a person, if you believe that ads are molding people's minds, you have a subgenius there being very influential through advertising.
Mm-hmm.
Through what he creates in his company. So there's a level of influence there.
Mm-hmm.
But that is within
but
the
it,
Android.
It is a point of media concrescence and reformulation. It is a vortex of within the Android meme.
Yeah. And so I explain them, tail the donkey on them, acknowledge just by discussing them as a kind of acknowledgement of what they have created, but that's only one of many things I explain.
Mm-hmm.
I explain why certain phenomena show up, and they're a contemporary phenomena, and I x-ray why they exist and why they offer the conundrum to people that engage them.
Right. So just
I would just say this, as I look back at my chart, these various memes that are subsets that I'm explaining are Orphic Baroque spirals.
You just nailed the next question. Because, you know, in the past I've heard you use the term Baroque spiral, and I've gotten an idea of what you mean within the context when you use the word Baroque spiral. But I just noticed, I guess I blanked it out because I couldn't grok what the hell you mean when you put the word Orphic in front of Baroque spirals. Now, Orpheus is the guy who tuned the world, right? And didn't he, like, end up some interplay with the underworld?
Yeah, but...
an Orphic Baroque spiral?
Okay, well, it's explained in the Memento of Prince Charles, but look under consciousness in the Croker quadrant. What's underneath it?
Hold on. Where's consciousness in the Croker quadrant?
Yeah.
Now, where is what column is consciousness under? I was just
looking at it.
Yeah.
You just scan across the Coker quadrant. It's the first word you see when you look at the Coker quadrant. You're looking at the capital letter, the darkened letters.
Right, you've got
Are you blind? I mean, you're looking at the chart, right?
I guess.
You guess.
This is it's satellite squared is the category, right?
Yeah.
And then you've got die quark. Okay, yeah. There it is.
There's what?
Okay, consciousness.
You see, it's quite obvious.
Right, yeah.
Now, what's underneath it?
Orpheus, and
yeah.
You have the word tetradic in brackets.
Right, so the human cannot be a pentadic or pentad manager. The human, at best, can be a tetrad manager. He tunes the solar government, the human beings running the solar government tuned the whole world. They were Orpheus.
Mm-hmm.
When the android meme takes over that role, the content of the pentad manager is the tetrad manager. So the content, so the Orphic Baroque spirals are the content of the pentadic android meme, and each quadrant, LaRouche, McLuhan, Thompson, Croker, are human beings who spiral out as content of the Dobbsian pentadic situation.
Hmm.
So remember, the content of the chart, which is 60 to 90, is what goes on between 60 to 90, and that's LaRouche up to me. So the content of the Dobbs quadrant is the other quadrants, and they're all Orphic Baroque spiralers. They're all Orpheuses that tune the world. I mean, they were heavy dudes.
Hmm.
LaRouche, McLuhan, Thompson, and Croker. And they were miming the heavy dudes of second nature, radio, television, computers, and satellites.
Well, they tuned the world for themselves and their cult of followers, which was
right,
a small group.
But wait, they're miming the tuning, the environmental tuning of the radio, television, computer, and satellite.
Mm-hmm.
You see, McLuhan, he expresses the tuning of the world carried out by television more than satellite. He was aware of the satellite effect, but his general expression was seen as a person talking about TV.
Uh-huh.
Thompson is seen as a person talking about the computer world. Croker is talking about the satellite and chip world. Right?
Well, in what sense is Thompson talking about the computer world, since we've got him pegged as the first nature or metaphysical astral guy?
Well, Thompson begins his career with the book At the Edge of History. And that's in 71. He gets beat out for the National Book Award, some one of those prizes, by Stuart Brand's Whole Earth Catalog. But he's a contender, so the book got a lot of attention. And at the same time, he starts forming Lindisfarne. And Lindisfarne and the book At the Edge of History, his thinking when he wrote At the Edge of History, was formed by the Limits to Growth Report by Mr. and Mrs. Meadows. I think they're Donna Meadows and her husband. They're the ones who made the first computer scan of what's going to happen with the resources we have in the late 60s. And inspired the formation of the Club of Rome, or the idea that we're going to run out of resources. The first industrial panic on ecological effects was laid out in the Limits to Growth, and that scenario was made possible by the computer.
Hmm. Okay.
So that Thompson is reacting to a computer profiling done by the Meadows.
Hmm. And he's doing that by sort of trying to retrieve first nature.
Yeah, he's trying to figure out how to save the ecology of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And all his thinking works around that.
Mm.
And it goes through different changes. He develops a different strategy in the 80s as opposed to his Dropo strategy in the 70s.
Mm.
Anyways, it's out of that report that concepts like James Lovelock's Gaia gain popularity because, yeah, he's expressing something that's out there in first nature, and it's just a second nature model of first nature, that the Computer Club of Rome report is warning us about.
Right. And you have people like Terrence who are diving into shamanism, trying to get back to what is it that the first people knew about first nature, to try to hoik that up in as a response.
And he ends up doing the trilogues with two Lindisfarne people, Ralph Abraham and who's the third guy he did it with? Remember, you ever seen those trilogues?
Rupert Sheldrake.
Yeah, and Sheldrake's definitely in the Thompson Quadrant.
Yeah.
And Ralph Abraham was a member of Lindisfarne.
Yeah.
So, yeah, McKenna, he talked about the soul becoming a chip. He said, the soul will be hardwired. At one of my shows on Cashflow back in August, September, I went through the evolution of the soul. And as a technological artifact, I think mine goes deeper than what Terrence was getting at. But the idea of the soul as hardwired is the idea of the android meme and the chip body moving into you that Croker deals with. But McKenna basically talks about it from the Thompson Quadrant perspective. Croker talks about the hardwiring of the soul from the chip body level, from the satellite, and then the holopathic shrinking of the satellite,
mm-hmm.
which becomes the android meme. So Croker goes into it deeper than McKenna does.
Well, I think McKenna's looking at the nature of the soul from the perspective of the shaman who hasn't even gone through the phases of technological development.
Right. I mean, he works with the cultural memes that you quote a lot, the Astro Body Archive. But he doesn't stay limited to yoga. He goes back to using psychoactive drugs, an earlier form of, quote, religion.
Right.
Or the sacred. And so he doesn't hang around and learn yoga.
No, I think he saw religion as that the first spiritual travelers or interdimensional voyagers were the shamans, and then when the technology of writing came in, it began to become formalized into religious. He said that the Tibetan tantras and mandalas had never been painted by the shaman, but they came from shamanic visions and then were crystallized, formalized, given their fractal structure and all of that because of the writing.
And frozen. And then people would spend, you know, years learning to get their brain chemistry or astral chakras in shape to have the vision. Whereas Terrence would say, hey, why do that? Here, take this. Get it this afternoon.
Right.
But he was looking at a first nature antidote to the android meme, which was doing that, giving the drug to everybody 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
Given the ayahuasca, the LSD, the mescaline trip, as McLuhan said, electric media means inner tripping.
Mm-hmm.
Constant inner tripping.
Mm. Yeah, inner being proprioceptive and tactile.
Yeah. Not really tactile, but proprioceptive, osmic, acoustic, visual, and kinetic, all five interplaying.
I thought visual would have more of a external tripping or...
Well, there's the tactile, visual tactile, or the proprioceptive visual, which is what you get in the Thompson Quadrant. Remember, it's acoustic, kinetic, osmic, over proprioceptive visual.
Oh, yeah.
So that's the inner eye.
Oh, okay. So it's proprioceptive, visual, kinetic, proprioceptive, visual, osmic, proprioceptive, visual, acoustic.
Yes, well, were you looking at all of them? There's no proprioceptive in the...
I was just looking at the Thompson Quadrant just now.
Okay, because there's no proprioceptive in the Lerouge Quadrant, there is in the McLuhan quadrant and in the Thompson and in the Croker, but the Croker is proprioceptive squared.
LaRouche has proprioceptive as the ground.
Well, I don't see that. Is that there?
Yeah.
No, it's just osmic acoustic.
Proprioceptive? Well, let's see.
Oh, I'm looking at...
I have two charts. That's why I got confused a little while when I was looking for them. I have one that's all blown up and the character... things are not organized the same, but no, I have two charts, and one of them is a proprioceptive osmic and acoustic as ground for LaRouche. It's probably an older chart.
Okay, here it is. I'm looking at EarMap's chart, and it does have mistakes.
Hmm.
But I have to go back to the original chart. I like EarMap's because it's slick. But if I go to the chart archive at Five Bodied and go into the original tiny note chart, which is not, for some reason, doesn't come up anymore.
Mm.
It doesn't enlarge.
Oh.
When you click on it on my screen. Mm-hmm. So if I look at, yes, I'm looking at the very tiny print. Yes, proprioceptive was in there. So I was temporarily blinded by my own translator.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the proprioceptive was in there, yeah. So my point was that the LaRouche. Now I'm going to go back to the tiny the slick chart because it's easier to map. The proprioceptive is not in the awareness of those in the LaRouche quadrant,
which is a mistake.
Right. Well, it's a lack of awareness, but it's not a mistake because. Because the Gutenberg science and the print book science and then the kinetic sciences, the industrial sciences, suppressed the magic, suppressed the alchemical tradition, right?
Mm-hmm.
Peter Lamborn Wilson complains about this, or his other name, Hakeem Bey, he writes about this. And he thinks we should retrieve the alchemical tradition. Because they suppressed the right hemisphere, and Nephi is the left hemisphere, the genius of that was it created our machines. And so it was biased, but you needed that extreme bias to create the mechanical culture that led to the electronic culture.
Mm-hmm.
If we never went through the visual bias or the visual genius, both ways, services and disservices, we would still be stuck in medieval alchemy or the mysteries of the proprioceptive.